Blog Talk Radio.
Rivetti, what's up?
I'm sorry, sir. It's just a difference of opinion that got out of hand.
What about?
It's really too silly to talk about, sir. I'd rather just forget about
it. I don't give a damn about what you'd rather forget about. Why were you two fighting?
Well, I said that the Kirby Silver Surfer was the only real Silver Surfer, and that the Mobius Silver Surfer was shit. And Benefield's a big Mobius fan, and things got out of hand. I pushed him, he pushed me. I lost my head, sir. I'm sorry.
Rivetti, you're a supervisor. You can get a commission like that.
I know it, sir. You're 100% right. It's never happened again,
It better not happen again. I see this kind of nonsense, I'm going to write you up. You understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
You have to set an example even in the face of stupidity. Now, everybody that reads comic books knows that Kirby Silver Surfer is the only true Silver Surfer. Now, am I right or wrong?
You're right, sir.
All right. Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No. It's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Yo, 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 it's that time, folks. Welcome once again. This is Afro Nerd Speaking, of course, and this, of course, well, not of course, is the Grindhouse Show. Normally it would be. We're going to do it a little bit differently. There were some wires that were crossed, miscommunications on my part, and we were supposed to have the show, but what we're going to do instead is have an extended comic shop show. So we're going to give you 90 minutes of pulp, pop, sci-fi, video gaming, comic books, graphic novels, you know what, we got it, we're into it. So let's go to a real quick nerdcore groove. When we get back, we're going to do the damn thing, talk about comics and stuff. This is Inhuman by Adam Warrock. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
There grew a people who emerged unlike the rest. There stood a queen whose hair was deadly as the fire within her chest. Whose younger sibling could control the winds with just a single breath. Whose bloodline of Attilans and madmen tried their best to keep the peace above the caste of lower people underfit. Who fought against celestial beings emerging from the mist. We stand apart from petty struggles where society was wasted. Seeking peace in quiet times, though at times had to face the fact that maybe war was still the answer. And so we answered force with proportional force until they put their hands up. A family of beings didn't fit in any places, cause our forms were scorned as different from the marks upon our faces. So we stand together, hand to hand, back to back, trapped within a kingdom from the forces that sit waiting to attack. They're in the shadows as I sit and take a breath and simply wait. When I speak, I'll be handing you your fate. I am a king without a voice, and so I speak through actions. Over warring factions, reading your reactions. Silent for the fact I have my vocal cords relaxing. We are inhuman, why you asking? So I sit inside a tower and I meditate the day to focus energy and discipline to keep myself awake. Because I fear I fall to slumber and I whisper in my sleep. And my words will level cities, crack the ground beneath your feet. My family is made of working class citizens. Turn to God before the lights come on when all the chariots sit are filling in, who travel eons to bring the good word to your eardrums and scrap together lies in the cracks between the streets from every city on the map. We bond together through the series of these interwoven fiber optic arteries and fat. Carry blood and oxygen to our brains and feed our hearts with the veins. Some people call us insane and so we laugh. They don't understand our culture, understand our legacy, understand the loads on our back that keep us heavy in our heads. And so I choose my words wisely, and when I speak, not a person will deny me. I am a king without a voice, and so I speak through actions, over warring factions, reading your reactions, silent for the fact I have my vocal cords relaxing. We are inhuman, why you asking? I am a king without a voice, and so I speak through actions, over warring factions, reading your reactions, silent for the fact I have my vocal cords relaxing. We are inhuman, why you asking? I am a king without a voice, and so I speak through actions.
All right, pulling out the phaser once again. That was the great Adam Warrock, and that was Inhuman. And certainly go to adamwarrock.com to his site and check out a lot of free downloads. I would definitely advise our listenership to do that. And then when you get into Adam Warrock and you listen to his lyrics, I mean, this is a nerdcore tip now. This isn't Kanye West, but to be able to rap so succinctly about pulp and comic books and science fiction, to rap adroitly like that, that's something. I mean, I really have to give that up to the whole nerdcore crew, and they're able to really get into this subject matter, approach it seriously, and really spew it out the way that they're doing it. Kudos to the nerdcore crew. All right, folks, this is the Comic Shop solely. Normally, we have our Grindhouse show where it's Afro Nerd Radio and the Comic Shop. Our apologies, miscommunication, but the Comic Shop, to be honest with you, is deserving of extended time. So we're going to give it to you today. First of course, I could not do the show without any kind of efficacy, without my own podcast enterprise crew. First up, Captain Kirk. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it.
Big up the insipid Amazon.
Uh-oh.
Afro Nerd, check your mic.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Are you talking about Amazon and Amazon and Comixology?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll get into it. A lot more to that than I even thought about. Drones, I'll leave it at that. And of course, the uncanny Daryl B.
Marvel, DC, watch out. Amazon's coming.
You know what? I was going to get into this whole thing with the controversy with Bryan Singer, and we'll get into that. The timing of this makes me feel very suspicious. It just so happened to coincide a few weeks before the release of this undoubtedly going to be a blockbuster hit. But be that as it may, we'll talk about that next. Let's talk about, since you brought it up, and we were supposed to talk about this several shows ago, Amazon, the giant, the retail giant Amazon on the internet, just bought out Comixology, the digital distribution service for comic books and graphic novels. Daryl, what does this really mean? Like, why do you think Amazon went that route with Comixology?
Well, it's two levels. I'm not going to get overexcited about this. I'm going to look at this rationally, okay? It's two levels. One, it gives Dynamite, Dark Horse, Avatar, and these printing companies that were exclusive to Comixology, a higher online platform to compete with Marvel and DC. And the other thing to look at, and I know you'll probably know it more than Captain Kirk, Diamond distributors have to be quaking in their boots now. The reason why is they jerked around retailers in with a printed page for so long, and they've jerked around. Comic fans, we've ordered this through this. Oh, we don't have issues of this. Oh, it's late. Oh, if shipping to stores, essentially what Amazon did was, hey, all you guys looking for the printed page, you know, we got it. We got it right here with our Kindle. We've got it right here through our website. We got these books here where you don't have to go scrambling now. It's going to give the small press type companies a higher platform, if that makes sense. A higher, like, you got the, it forces the big two, Marvel and DC, to step their game up, but it also gives, I neglected Image, Dark Horse, Avatar, Dynamite. They now have a platform which, if they get their libraries up and on there, something to compete with them. So everybody has to be on their toes. This, I know there's downsides to this. I know it could be a bit of a monopolization in the future. But this, yeah, Diamond has to rethink their business model. They have to, with their previews and all that, they have to rethink their business model now, because this was a direct shot across the bow by Amazon. And Cosmicology, hey, you guys, I remember when you guys first started, right, the small little one website thing. This is making bank for them. Much bank. Back to you, Afrona.
Yes, let's hear from the captain that's on the business side. I mean, I know you really like this kind of stuff. What do you see in Amazon acquiring Comixology, and how this even interplays with digital comics to begin with?
Well, this is what you have to understand. When a fusion-powered company such as them, it's fusion power. That's power of the sun now, more power than fissioning. Fissioning is a nuclear reactor. When a fusion powered company such as Amazon gets involved in something like this, you have to somewhat be concerned. Not all the way, but you have to be somewhat concerned, because you have to understand something. When you're dealing with traditional comic books, that is a four-dimensional experience. You know, you go to the store over there, you know, and you experience it in a 4D reality. And that's really how it should be experienced. This is like going to the movies and everything else. That's a 4D reality. It's a great experience. Downloading comics, Kindle, and everything else, that turns into more or less a convenience. It's not really an experience. And when you have somebody such as this, as powerful as Amazon is, you definitely have to watch, because it can change to a certain extent, what's happening in the real world. You know, you just have to be careful and watch it. I don't want to be one of these conspiracy guys that I've seen there on the internet, and they say, oh, everything is over. That doesn't necessarily mean the case, you know, because we are going digital. Anyway, most things are going digital. Look what happened in the music situation. At one point when we were dealing with music, the experience, you would go to a Sam Goody. Your favorite artist might be there signing autographs. That's an experience. Now you're downloading an MP3 or MP4 file, and that's what you're dealing with. That's a convenience. So you went from an experience to a convenience. And that's the way I see a lot of these digital comics. You know, going to the store, as you guys both know, Daryl B. and the great Afro Nerd, when you go to the comic book store, you not only talk about comic books, you talk other things with your comic brethren. That is an experience. So when you have somebody such as an Amazon who's this powerful, you have to be somewhat concerned. You don't have to be worried, but you have to be concerned, and you have to watch it somewhat, because there's always a possibility, because they're so powerful, that experience can be put in jeopardy. But as long as you have people as vocal as the great Daryl B., they will have a hard time if that's their eventual plan. So with you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I'm a bit indifferent about this. I like Comixology. Well, first of all, if you break this thing down, it's getting us, and the captain was hinting at this in what he just spoke about so aptly, is that they're getting us prepared for the switchover, for the changeup. And it's been going in an incremental kind of thing. Darryl and myself, we grew up with going to these stores. And it is an experience, as the captain said. It's very much like being Norm from Cheers. You know, Norm walks in, the entire place greets you. And that's very similar to your favorite shops. And we go to a number of different shops, and it's different experiences, but the excitement of going to the shop, the physicality of going in the shop, looking around, having conversations, discovering new books, and discovering new material, new product, that you can't really get that online. It's something is lost, and there has been this slow crawl. Or maybe it might even be less than a slow crawl. It might be a quick run, but I'm going to say a slow crawl to get us to accept this. Because Comixology, I've been using Comixology for a couple of years now, and even that can be construed as being blasphemous to someone who's purely about going to the comic store. But it is a convenience. Sometimes you can't get that book when you want that book. If you go the digital route, you get it in an instant. But there's a difference in reading your book on your laptop, on your Kindle, on your iPod, on your phone. It's not quite the same as holding the physical book in your hand. Now, the geeks and the nerds have already gone one step further and saying, wait a minute, even on the physical book end, imagine if this Amazon droning thing actually goes, if we actually see that. So they're trying hard for that to happen. So that means that on comic book day, your books can be delivered to your doorstep 30 minutes just by a click of a button on your computer screen. So we don't even know if that is the next 5 or 7 or 10 years, if that might be a possibility. So, I mean, you know, this is very much a business move. This is what businesses have done. They merge, they buy out, they improve. This is more, even goes beyond comic books, to be honest with you. This is just the nature of things, where thriving businesses, like the comic dealers, they're making it very hard for these folks to continue to make a living because of convenience. So I'm just concerned as to how Amazon is going to this work, in the sense that I know Comixology's site. So now that it's going to be, I guess, on Amazon, you know, I guess the efficiency will be there. But I grew comfortable with Comixology as a site unto itself. So we'll see. I'm curious as to what this will mean on a business tip. But I know that for the independent, I think Darryl talked about this, the independent books, the independent writers. Even Comixology has a section called Comixology Submit, where all these lesser-known artists and writers and comic book creators would get a shot. Now their universe has expanded through Amazon, and even Amazon has had their own foray into independent publishing just as far as regular books, and that's been quite successful. So it gives people... You lose some things, you gain some things. We'll see how it works out. I'm indifferent at this point right now. Not sure how to call it. Darryl, anything else on this? Any other thoughts about the Comixology Amazon move?
Look, I'm just afraid now that it's gotten this big, it's next on Disney's hit list. Just think about it. Marvel, Muppets, Star Wars, you know, the bigger you get, the more popular you get, more Disney wants to buy you. So, Amazon, good luck with this. Back to you, Effinard.
Let's talk about Brian Singer. He's a popular director, obviously. He's been in this X-Men universe for quite some time now. But he's been accused of molestation. And it's not just that, but it actually discloses a culture in Hollywood that has been long time whispered, going back for decades. When I think of someone like James Dean, iconic actor that died at the age of 24, after only, I believe he only did 3 films, like, in the same year. He died at 24, I believe at 1954. And it was rumored that he was bisexual. But it's rumored in the sense of kind of that's the way you have to be for expediency in Hollywood. So Hollywood has this thing about power, money, sexuality, access, secret cultures, secret societies. And this young man that's coming forward, he's going into a great bit of detail as to this secret society that Bryan Singer and other powerful Hollywood people comprised of. So I think it becomes a little bit unsettling when, you know, you're talking about a movie that's coming out, and the movies are meant to be escapism. You're trying to escape weirdness and wild stories and troubles, and this brings you back to reality, I guess, but I don't understand why you just can't get the job. And that's what the captain and I were talking about behind the scenes, is that you just can't get the job. And it's always been this way. It's always been this hint of some secret culture, some secret in, and you can't just get the job. So I'm going to play this clip, courtesy of Clever News, about the Bryan Singer accusations, and then we'll come back. Hold on.
X-Men director Bryan Singer is facing accusations of sexually abusing a teenage boy. Director Bryan Singer is in the final stretch before his new highly anticipated superhero movie, X-Men Days of Future Past, hits theaters. But that excitement will now have to take a backseat because we're hearing today that Singer is facing very serious federal charges for drugging and raping a teenage boy. According to court documents, this incident reportedly happened nearly 15 years ago when a then 17-year-old aspiring actor by the name of Michael F. Egan III was propositioned for a role in a future X-Men movie from the director, but only if he gave in to Singer's alleged demands. According to Egan, he encountered Singer at the Paul Mitchell Estate in Hawaii, where he was allegedly drugged by the director by being forced to inhale cocaine. Egan then was allegedly pushed by Singer into a pool where he was held underwater and forced to perform sex acts. Singer allegedly told the boy that if he didn't concede to his demands, that the director would destroy his acting career. The official complaint accuses Singer of manipulating his, quote, power, wealth, and position in the entertainment industry to sexually abuse and exploit the underage plaintiff through the use of drugs, alcohol, threats, and inducements, which resulted in plaintiff suffering catastrophic psychological and emotional injuries. Singer's reps are denying these charges, claiming that the reports are, quote, completely without merit, and they feel very confident that Bryan will be vindicated in this, quote, absurd and defamatory lawsuit. Singer's reps also made a point to say that the filing of this lawsuit was an obvious attempt to gain attention and publicity since Singer's X-Men Days of Future Past is supposed to hit theaters on May 23rd. We will keep you updated as things develop on this story. For Clever News, I'm Erin Robinson, and thanks for watching.
All right, we're back. Once again, folks, this is an extended comic shop show. The Grindhouse returns next Saturday, and, of course, Afternoon Radio returns on Wednesday. As I said before the news clip, I'm just concerned that this is so much about an underground Hollywood society. And actually, if you want to be fair about this, that this kind of thing happens in all types of avenues of power. When you think of the church, and the Catholic Church, and even in the Jewish faith, and even in Black Christianity, if I want to use that term correctly, there have been molestation issues and concerns, and I don't know what we can do about this, but I'm a bit curious as to how this is being played out right at the time that X-Men Future, Days of Future Past is about to hit the theater. You would think that some kind of deal would have been done before this actually got to this point. So, Captain, what are your thoughts on this? What do you think this really is? Do you think there's any truth to this thing, or is it complete fabrication, or is this the way the world works?
I think it has something to do with the way the world works. Let's back up. Let's look at Catholicism real quickly. According to historical record, the Catholics tortured and murdered 1 million women, prosaically known as the Spanish Inquisition. Look it up. That's according to historical record, not my record. And some will say that this type of practice goes on today. Just look at your news reports with Catholic priests. Some will say that. Now, allegedly, they say there's different type of mafias in Hollywood. Allegedly, they say that there's a pedophile mafia. Allegedly, they say that there's a Scientology mafia. And among other things that go on. Allegedly, they also say there's a Satanist mafia in Hollywood. Allegedly. Now, we've been hearing about this like a little buzz, like in people's ear, you know, about these things for years, just as the great Afro nerd said earlier. Now, the question is, why is this particular individual coming out now with the direct assault to the X-Men director? That's the question that needs to be asked. Also, maybe it is time that what's done in the dark comes to the light and the people actually know with hardcore facts, so we could take out the allegedly from the statement, feel that this is just the way of the world, and this type of behavior is involved in a lot of different walks of life. Just as Afro Nerd and myself were talking about behind the scenes, why can't you just get the job? Why do we have to go with all the shenanigans, you know, to this high level? You know, what is going on? That's all. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, the casting couch has been a colloquialism that's been put out there for decades. And it's always been whispered, and this is a type of casting couch. I mean, it's unnerving because we're dealing with a homosexual element to it. But if you were to expand out of that, I'm looking at it even beyond that, in the sense that there's always been this hint that you have to sell your soul to become a part of this industry. So I will say this also, you know, I'm a believer that you don't do anything that you do not want to do. Now, it's a different element when you're preying on young people, and young people are impressionable and that kind of thing. But I think it's imperative, and that's what we do on the other side of the show, Afro Radio, to really impart the notion that we have to make our younger folk more solid in their thinking, so that if something like this happens, they're able to say, "Nah, man, I don't care about a damn movie at this point. That's not my thing." You know, but you get the hint of these are impressionable young people, and they will sell their souls for a piece of fame, a piece of something that is illusory anyway. So this young person, he's only 30 now, but when he got involved in this thing, he was 17, so this is 15 years ago, and now he has awoken out of his stupor. He's an admitted alcoholic and has all these issues, and now it takes 15 years for him to realize, hey, this is madness I was in. So the only thing I'll say is that when you wake up 15 years later, people start to say, well, you know, why now? It gets to be a little bit suspicious. So I think it's more effective to nip this stuff in the bud as it happens, very close to when it happens. 15 years later, stories get a little shaky. People start to really be able to discredit you. Darryl, what are your thoughts on this? What does this mean for the release of the upcoming X-Men film, first of all? Will it affect
one? Well, it's going to affect it because it gets tied to Singer, and the thing with these allegations and everything is they never leave you. I'll give you an example from the sports world that just happened, okay? There's a college called Minnesota State, all right? Their football coach a couple of years ago had pictures of his kids, all right? A little kids playing around in the bathtub. All right? To them, someone reported it, seen it on his computer or whatever, and he was arrested for child pornography. Okay? It went to court. He was exonerated because they were his kids. His kids playing around. He thought it was fun. Unfortunately, he got fired right away for it. Okay? So he got another job. He sued to get his money back. The judge actually put him back on the said that it was unlawful fire and put him back. The players on the team have voted not to play the season under him because of the stigma. Now, he has been exonerated from it, but because he was attached and accused in the first place, that stigma stays. Bryan Singer, no matter what happens now, his cred is damaged. You don't shake this. I'm not saying he's guilty like Roman Polanski. I don't know the facts, but think about it now. Anytime you hear Roman Polanski's name, you're great director, pedophile. Bryan Singer's going to have to deal with that. Now, again, I'm in your camp with this, okay? Me, I get attacked like this or this happens, I'm not waiting 15 years. There's some retribution happening right away, all right? Whether it be through legal channels or in my damaged mind payback on the person that did it to me, all right? 15 years is kind of fishy. All right, and we've seen with the Sandusky case in Penn State, not everybody that came out had the most altruistic motives in reporting him. They stayed quiet too long, and some had I got to get it out. I wasn't the only one, and because they came out, I came out. Blah, blah, blah. But Bryan Singer's a name that's always been out there. Why now? It's kind of. That's the fishy. This is to sound insensitive, but that's the problem with these cases. When you take a long time with it and bring it out, everybody's going to question your motivation for doing it. You know, it's one thing a year, 2 years, 15 years. That's kind of hard. At the same time, something like this affects everybody differently. You know, but there is no way that people aren't going to attach this to Singer, no matter what happens, and by proxy attach it to his work, i.e. the X-Men movies, i.e. Superman, i.e. everybody's going to be looking back at that stuff through a filtered lens now. So he's damaged either way. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, it makes me question whether I will see the X-Men movie. I probably will, but it's not a comfortable feeling to see someone's work that may have this looming over their heads. And again, these parties, I remember hearing this stuff. I heard a story about the actor that played Angel, the Angel character.
David Boreanaz.
Yeah, something about him having to go into this hot tub with Singer to get the job, something weird. I heard whispers about that. you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Now, courtesy of the Daily Beast, and I would implore our audience to go to the Daily Beast, there was this, well, see, I'm looking at this thing now, I'm even looking at this at Gawker. It says, Brian Singer's obsession with barely legal boys was an open secret. And I'm looking at, they got pictures of, like, you know, a bunch of dudes in a pool. I mean, this is a recipe for disaster. I don't know anything about this world, but there's a lot of things that are going on. And what the captain said, what's in the dark will soon come to light. And unfortunately, this is the way the world, I think the way the world works. And hopefully, I'm a believer that if someone rapes somebody, irrespective of their sexuality or the sex, you work hard to get their butts put into jail. Not trying to get some kind of financial compensation. That's the part that I'm a little confused also. It always appears to be kind of sort of a shakedown as opposed to putting this person in jail for a criminal act. That's another element that disturbs me. But we'll see how this plays out. I feel sorry for this young man if he was harmed. I feel sorry for the fans who want to escape. We go to movies to escape nonsense, and it's not a good thing for nonsense to follow you into those moments of escapism. All right, folks. Again, not the Grindhouse show, not necessarily. This is an extended comic shop show. Miscommunication. We'll be back in full effect next Saturday for an entire Grindhouse After Nerd and comic Shop show. But this is pretty good anyway. The Comic Shop deserves a 90-minute show, so why not? There's always a lot to talk about on both ends of the Grindhouse. Let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, more discourse. This is Gigantor by Helmet. Saturday morning cartoons, greatest hits. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Against wrong. We'll be right back.
We're back once again, Saturday morning cartoons, greatest hits. That was Gigantor, the famed anime show. And that's the anime, of course, their interpretation of the Gigantor theme by Helmet. Helmet. Folks, we're back. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Talking about all things pop, pulp, comic books, video gaming, sci-fi, fantasy, you name it, we got it. Gentlemen, I want to talk about this UK series. I would say it's a new one, but it's new to me. I'm surprised I didn't hear about this. Daryl knows this is my modus operandi. I get into these things late. We're already approaching series two. At least that's how it's said in the UK. We normally say season two. They say series two of In the Flesh. And In the Flesh, I guess the closest way to describe this excellent BBC UK series, it is the UK's version of The Walking Dead. Some have likened it to being a thinking man's Walking Dead. So it's very easy to get into because, as you know, oftentimes with these series from the UK, they only have a couple of episodes per season/series. So we're talking about three hour-long episodes comprising of the last series, and now the second series commences, I believe, next month. Let's go to Daryl on this. Daryl, were you familiar with In the Flesh? Have you ever seen it before?
Yes, I was familiar with it. I got to check out the second episode. I missed the first, I missed the third. Got to check it out, and it's seemingly, for comic book fans, I liken it to the Deadwardians, which is where, like, zombies become, like, almost like a working force type thing, or something where they become part of the culture almost, and And honestly, it opens up the debate, just like Walking Dead. Walking Dead's a good comparison for the intelligent man, maybe, but it opens up the debate. Where do you go when you die? Or what happens to your essence when you die? What makes a person truly human? Literally, what makes a person truly human? And can we control our own baser urges? I think that's the universal question here. But, again, kudos to BBC America, all right? And, BBC, it'll be shown on BBC America again, the second season will be. And hopefully, in showing the second season, they'll reshow the episodes from the first for those that miss it, because they always take chances with their properties. We'll do this. We're not just Victorian England, you know, comedy, super spy. We're not just that. We do zombies. We do outer space. We do time travel. On the other side, we do romance. We do detectives. I'm a firm believer that in the BBC, there's no word as can't. With some of these properties, they will do anything. They will, but it has to be quality. Something we've said on this show many times. They don't just put out any old shite up on the screen. You got to show me this quality here for us to put it on. If there's quality, if there's something we think we can work with, we'll put it on and give it a chance. Hey, BET, Sci-Fi Channel, you taking notes? Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, that's an excellent way of looking at it. It makes you wonder that, you know, BET will not take chances like this. And actually, a lot of programming that, you know, we're seeing more and more cable vehicles, cable outlets for people of color, and yet we're not seeing a HBO-style programming for a person of color coming from, in this case, you know, let's say TV One. I think Puffy was trying to purchase one. I think he has a Revolt TV. I think that might have gone by the wayside. But we do have a number of cable outlets, and I don't see them pursuing something like this They're going for the safe, stereotypical bet. And this is from folks that think to look at this from outside the community. This is within the community, and they're still going to give you the same old pablum. But BBC, they seem to be very adept at giving you something a little bit different. Now, to give the audience a bit more information about this In the Flesh series, again, we're talking about the second series, second season, three episodes commonly per season. The main protagonist is a teenager by the name of Kieran Walker. That's the character, Kieran. And Kieran is part of The Walking Dead. He was a person that was affected by this by this zombie apocalypse. But in this new world order, again, we're talking about survivors after this zombie apocalypse. Things have returned back to normal somewhat. The zombies are sanctioned off by the military, and they're given a daily medical treatment that enables them to be sentient, that enables them to be pretty much back on track. Appearance is that of a normal, which one would be as a zombie, pale face and eyes are weird, but everything else is okay, and they're able to go back into society, and they're known as having PDS, which is pretty funny, partially deceased syndrome. PDS, they are affected by this. This is their own protected class, but they're like everybody else. They're moving back into societies, and folks are not too welcoming of these folks. They remember that, hey, you killed someone, you bit someone, or whatever, however it works, you murdered someone. And these folks, since they're coming back to themselves, they're remembering their acts, and it causes a lot of internal turmoil. So it's an excellent program. I don't want to give away too much, but it gives a different take that you have. You still have zombies that are they're roaming around. They're considered, quote, rabid. And if they're captured, they can get help. But even when they do get help and they're brought back, they're treated like second-class citizens, and they're still not really forgiven. So it's an interesting, unique take to the whole zombie theme. And we've seen zombies in cinema for 70, 80 years. This is something different. And I'm not really surprised by BBC. So season two coming up next month. Captain, your thoughts. What are your thoughts about In the Flesh? Is it truly a thinking man's Walking Dead? Can they really be compared?
Hell no. Walking Dead is one of the best things on TV, and that has been established already. This is something entirely different, and that was their mistake. When this series first came out, it was touted as, oh, this is going to be right there and rival The Walking Dead. Mistake number one. You don't go there. You set yourself up for failure with that. Now, that being said, great concept. This is a great concept, and kudos to them for doing something different. Right? That's good. That's excellent, and that's what you want to do because of the climate, that's what you have to do. You have Walking Dead. You had World War Z. You have 28 Days, and you have all of these great zombie flicks in the past. We know what it is. We know all about zombies. So, you know, that's the way you have to come. Now, me watching it from when it first came out a couple of times, I never liked it, but I could see people getting into it. The British accents for me just didn't work here for this. Works great with Misfits, though. Misfits, I thought, was incredible. But for this, it came off corny to me. For some reason, it just didn't work for me from that standpoint. But the concept is incredible, though. It's a great concept, you know, and that's just what I felt about it. Now, so I could see some people liking it and getting into it, definitely. But this is not Walking Dead, and do not expect to see something like Walking Dead. Walking Dead has you on the edge of your seat, even when you know what's coming in Walking Dead. So there you go. Back over to you, Sir Halfman.
You know what? Captain does bring up a point. When you compare it to the big show out there, it kind of hurts if you don't have what they have. And this is by no means an action-adventure, and that's what Walking Dead is. You know, you got to watch how you compare these shows to other shows and stuff. And Americans did try to copy this, or one of those synchronistic things, because I remember a stupid teen movie that came out, Dead Things or something like that, where a girl, her boyfriend gets turned and he starts, and it became like a teen rom-com zombie type. I remember looking at the commercials and just going, ugh, I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole. But into the Flesh, I liked. It hit you in a, it's almost a cerebral type thing, but I knew going in that they were wrong on how they were advertising it. And that's a brilliant point by Cap. Afronud?
Yeah, I can't necessarily disagree with the captain. I do feel that this series has its moments. There were some pretty riveting moments on an emotional level. But as far as that suspense feeling that you get from The Walking Dead, even what you get from the comic, listen, I got that from the comic book. I still get that from the comic book, where you don't know what the hell is going to happen as you're reading it. And there's been times I've been reading the book, and have my mouth is open as to what comes back, what comes up next in the next panel. They're being able to interpret this for the small screen is another matter. So I just appreciate that we're in a time where we have all these choices. I mean, to think that In the Flesh just works for what it is. I'm happy for that because, listen, on the music side, Captain, it's not like this. We're suffering. They have no problems. You know what I'm getting at. They have no problems feeding you the same oatmeal. Nothing changes on the movie. If the music industry was able to dovetail off of what TV is doing right now, all these different avenues, you could look at movies and TV on the internet, on your phone, your iPad, your video gaming systems, your Roku, whatever. It's a whole different world right now as far as TV is concerned, and I'm loving it. Music, not so much. So I would implore our audience, anyway, check out In the Flesh, but they don't necessarily walk in there trying to make it, compare it to Walking Dead. Everyone's doing that. I think it stands on its own, which is more respectful. All right, now, speaking of more TV shows, new cinema, we enter another series two, or season two, of Orphan Black. And this is the little engine that could, I believe, with this type of show, because I've been talking about this thing for a long time. This is at least one of the TV shows that I got in on early, and I stuck with it because the first couple of shows are a little, I don't want to say dull, but you don't really know what's going on, and it's not really, you know, it's not really cooking. The pressure cooker isn't on till maybe the fourth or fifth episode. But once, and I plead with folks, stick with it. I think maybe the second episode I was ready to just dump. But something made me go back to it. Once I went back, I said, okay, wait a minute. This actress is phenomenal. I think her name is Tatiana Maslany, I think her name is.
Yeah.
She plays, we don't know how many characters. I think for the moment she's played maybe upwards of 8 or 9 different personalities, and there are probably more forthcoming. This is something else too that could be tropey, you know. And that's something else. As I think about it, you know, we've seen vampires, we've seen werewolves. Now we're going through the zombie phase. Now this could open up a new branch of the cloning phase, and this could be very tropey. We've seen a number of properties that have dealt with clones as a topic. But this right here, I mean, heck, there's an image book called Clones that's pretty good. But there's a trope to these things. There's a meme to clone stories. This is totally different. This goes to the skill level of the actress, with her being able to legitimately pull off so many different distinct personalities, and you forget that it's one woman. So we're getting into season two, This is a Canadian series. We see that the gentleman that plays Max Headroom from years ago, and also he was in
Eureka.
Eureka, the sci-fi series Eureka. I like the way this is another show that doesn't really play up. It's not dumb. What are your thoughts about Orphan Black going into season two? And a lot of write-ups. There's a fan base. I think this is like another kind of thing that people know about, but it could still use some more exposure, I think. What are your thoughts on the season two coming up, Daryl?
Well, I will say this. Everybody that I've recommended the show to has watched it, and not one person has come back saying, why the hell have you recommended this to me? They've come back saying, where can we get a version of this? Two, in terms of clones, I recommend the last Peter David X-Factor series with Madrox, all right? Because it takes an element of Orphan Black. Before Orphan Black even came out, it took an interesting element with Madrox and all the personalities of his various clones or his dupes, and it worked it in. And it was almost like synchronicity, you know? The closest thing to Orphan Black was you have to go way back to Michael Keaton in Multiplicity to get something like that. And that was played for laughs. Orphan Black is deadly serious, guys. Deadly serious. And the best part of this and the best thing about it is she is playing the multiple roles and all of them feel real. At times you lose yourself watching this wondering which one is the real one, even though they all have the distinctive looks in with hair, glasses, braids, clothing, but the way she, all of them feel natural. Some very, very scary, and AfroNerd knows the characters I'm referring to with that. Some kind of goofy, but all of them feel natural. Like this happens every day. Hey, that's number one. Hey, there's number four. Hey, there's number six. You know, like you've known these characters all your life. And that's the mark of a good to great television show. If you can relate with the characters, no matter how weird, strange, fantastical, head-turning, stomach-churning the situation may be, if you can relate with the characters and time and the end of the show seems to come and you look at the clock and wonder, wait, didn't I just watch the whole show went already? Damn. Thank God for DVR. You know? That's one of the best attributes to Orphan Black. You get into it, and then all of a sudden time's over. Like, I just sat down. What the hell happened? So here's hoping the second season, T-minus 2 hours away, is greater than the first. But it's hard to top it because the first ended with a pure, I would say roller coaster ride, but I liken it to Captain America jumping out the back of the C-130 to begin Winter Soldier. Just a thrill ride going straight down, and I hope that continues. Back to you, AfroNerd.
You know, I mentioned Robert Kirkman's Image comic, Clone. I said it plurally, but it's actually Clone, singular, Clone. Has that been green-lighted, Daryl, for some kind of TV series? I thought it was.
Yeah, you should reverse it the other way. Is there anything Robert Kirkman hasn't written at this point that hasn't been greenlit? The one thing Walking Dead did is now everybody wants all of Kirkman's properties. My problem with Clone is if they do it, there's a lot of Michael Bay's The Island in that clone. There's a lot of I forget the movie, the television show with the doctor with the split personality, and even the Christian Slater show where one of them is a hitman and the other man is a normal dude, and they switch places, or one's mistake stuck for the other. You know, there's hints of that. Clone has a large part to that. It's got to carve out its own niche to be interesting in the multimedia phase. Right now, it seems derivative, but that's just me. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
No, it's not just you. That's my. I mean, I like Clone as a comic, but to interpret it for the TV screen when Orphan Black is on something different with the clone mythos, that's the part that's troubling. But listen, we know that Robert Kirkman is a phenomenal writer, and you're right. I mean, what hasn't he done as far as folks giving him money and interpreting his work? Thief of Thieves, another excellent comic book, that has been greenlighted for TV. So I'm, you know, listen, there's so much stuff out here. Where is this stuff going to go? That's what I'm wondering. They've got to go to Amazon, and we see that we've mentioned a couple of times with Powers going to Microsoft, to Xbox. I'm sorry, yeah, PlayStation, pardon me, to PlayStation. Xbox has its own. I mean, this, if they're going to greenlight everything, which is what it appears to be, there's not enough avenues conventionally. They're going to have to go to the Xbox and the Netflixes and the Amazons. I didn't even mention to our audience The After, which is a pilot series. That, I liked it, but it was pretty derivative also. But I appreciated the production value for Amazon.com. They make TV shows now. They have their own programming. So I just applaud the effort. Did you? Since I'm kind of going off track a little bit, Dale, did you see The After?
Yeah. And again, like I said, it's got to carve its own niche. Right now, it's got parts of – you could see parts of comics in it. You could see parts of horror TV in it. You could see even parts of comedic TV in it. The thing – and this is something Captain says, all right? Captain says it all the time. Quality will shine through, but it takes a moment to get there. The problem is, will the viewers – last with the product to go with it all the way. We see it with Arrow. People that jumped off Arrow trying to jump back out and then binge watch. We seen it with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after the Cap movie. People jumping back on. Wait, what did I miss? You know, you go like a thing. But and then this series like Smallville, like what's another long run, like Heroes, where fans are devoted from day one, and no matter how much it turns to crap, you're sticking with it because, hey, it's bound to get better. The after, it's middling. I got to see where they go with it from here. The concept, okay, but you've seen the concept a million times before, you know? We've told people all the time, multimedia, we got books upon books upon books. As I'm talking to you, I'm looking at my bookshelf. I have like 600 trades staring me right in the face of stuff that no one has even touched on TV and thing. Why keep on repeating? You could keep on making new stuff. But Cap says they keep on repeating because there's that built-in fan base, which means guaranteed money, which means we ain't taking chances. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Captain, what are your thoughts about Orphan Black and, I guess, the expansion of the TV universe?
Darryl made me laugh there.
Hey, well, I sounded like you there, right? I'm trying.
Oh, man. That was good, Darryl. That was good. All right, see, Orphan Black is a very good show. What happened with Orphan Black in the beginning was you need character development. So the first three episodes are fecal matter. When you get to episode four, it's on and popping. tremendous actress, very good show. But the first three episodes, because you have to build the character development, you have to lay the groundwork. It's a bit slow, and it just seems like it's not going to work. You get to episode four, boom, worth checking out. It's a good show. Tremendous actress, great concept. Roll the dice, do a little something different. I like the expanding universe because, you know, you have to look at what these guys are doing. You get a series, right? And it comes out, and it's only 11 episodes. And the thing is, a series that you like, it doesn't run week after week after week after week. It runs for 4 weeks, and they take 2 weeks off, and they come in. They throw you all over the place. So you have to have other things going while you're waiting for your show to pick back up. So that's why you need to expand the universe the way they like to do things now. And you look at, what's the name of the series I'm looking for now? I can't remember the name of it. I don't believe this. I talk about it all the time. HBO Police series.
Oh, True Detective.
True Detective. Now, 8 episodes. What is that? It's over. Now you need to go watch something else. You see? So you need to expand the universe. So you've always got something to check out when you have the free time. So it's a beautiful thing. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, that also brings in the whole concept of binge-watching, because you mentioned True Detective. I haven't seen that yet. And I'm being told that's like the better than sliced bread. And I'm going to have to set the time for that. I mean, there's so many things I'm into. I'm into USA, some of the USA programming. Suits is one of my favorite programs. I think that's coming to a close pretty soon. But, you know, it, like you said, if there's something that's closes shop on one end, you got to find something else on the other end. And now that spring/summer is approaching, at one time, summer programming used to really be sucky. Now, you'd have to really wait till the fall comes back, wait till, you know, that transition wasn't a comfortable one from the summer to the fall. You had to wait a couple of months to really get back into your fall watching groove. But now there's enough programming that the summer, spring, summer rivals what's going on during the fall, winter season. So they finally somewhat figured this out, gentlemen, that folks are, you know, they're starting to count DVR numbers now, which will save shows. They're counting some of these numbers. I think they're probably counting some of the YouTube views now. They got to count this stuff because you're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of viewers to these things that they're unaware of. At one time, for many years, not counting these people for some weird reason. But then I think also there's advertising dollars they probably were able to get out of this adjusted viewing. There's always a money element.
Ding, ding, ding. Exactly.
That'd be it.
The money element and the advertising. That's why they paid no attention to online, because they're trying to sell advertising space on TV. And now they found out how to bilk us online with advertising and stuff. So, hey, we can count their numbers now. Big business.
You know, I just wish, and I said this before and I'll say it again, I just wish that we got our animated stuff in a separate programming sense, because listen, I miss Green Lantern the animated series. I miss the Young Justice, DC Nation. I don't know what's going on with DC Nation. It appears to be just about Teen Titans Go. And I'm saying, well, why don't you just have a network, whether it's Amazon? I mean, heck, you got Comixology now. Why don't they just have these series through some kind of format like that? Or they can't be any less or more expensive than live-action programming. Why not have some of these shows that you know really are geared toward young adults, where we can see extended programs of Young Justice and Green Lantern or anything else popping off? Because now we also are finding out, well, I know, that Beware the Batman is returning. But it's coming back, what, to Toonami, Daryl?
Yeah,
They realized they made a little mistake here by cutting it off as soon as it got good. But the problem is, and I forget the dude's name, Giancarlo Vosca, I think that's his name, Giancarlo Volpe from Green Lantern, the animated series. He went
Volpe?
To Tumblr. Yes, yes.
Volpe, yeah.
On Comics Alliance, they connected to his Tumblr. He did several cartoons detailing the experience he had with bringing Green Lantern, the animated series, to the screen, involving the suits, involving the hoops he had to go through, all right? And let's just say, since he didn't have the high name and high quality behind him, a lot of what we talked about with Dwayne McDuffie, a lot of what we talked about a couple shows ago, you know, a lot of that is presented by him in animated form. I mean, we're going to get to Son of Batman coming up, all right? It's easy to do the movie Bap It's Out. But for these series, the hoops these creators have to go through, you know, I'm not wishing that on anybody. I wish they would have creative freedom, but, again, big business. No creative freedom. Back to you.
Yeah, since you brought this up, let's go into it. Son of Batman's coming up. I was able to see it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, to be honest with you. But DC seems to be winning. DC / WB, we said this on and on ad nauseum, that they seem to be able to do at least a animated effort. They get that right. Translating it to live action, who knows what's going to happen. But it does make you wonder, you know, we see these direct-to-DVD things. They seem to be working. Extending it into a series format doesn't seem to work. The difference, and let's go to the captain on this. What do you think the difference between what happens as far as having a series animated effort as opposed to these one-shot DVD things? And also, by and large, what were your thoughts of Son of Batman? What did you think about it?
Okay, Son of Batman was very entertaining. It was very entertaining. I understand, you know, the League of Assassins, the training makes you a lot stronger than what it is. So, you know, you still have to suspend belief some. But once you suspend belief, it's very entertaining. And I know some people will say, well, you're watching a cartoon. It's all about suspending belief. Yes and no. Okay? Yes and no. It is about suspending belief because it is a cartoon. It is a comic book. It's comic book lore. We understand that. But yes and no. When Batman does something, you get it the way he does it. He comes into a room. There's 9 guys to take out. He knocks out 3 guys with his hands. Then he turns off the lights. Then he gasses the rest. Makes sense, right? Right. Now, you have this kid, Son of Batman, running around, taking his sword, beating the mess out of grown men. You somewhat have to suspend belief. You know he has been trained by the League of Assassins. And you know the League of Assassins training does make you stronger. But he's still a kid. Once you suspend the belief some, you can really enjoy this. I think it was done well. Now, far as releasing, you know, a straight-to-DVD versus, you know, a regular series, what happens, in my opinion, is that, you know, it's a run-up to it to a certain extent. You say, okay, this is coming out, this is coming out, this is coming out, this is coming out. You see it, you get entertained, and you say, okay, that's good. I'm glad. All right. Now when the series comes out, it's like, okay, it's not the same type of feeling. You're not as excited. So it has a tendency to drop off some. That's all. That's just my opinion on it. Straight to DVD, you know what's coming out. You're like, oh, well, we have to see it. We have to see this. Then weekly series, you know, you're more or less like, okay, so what? No big deal. That's just my opinion. Back over to you, Sir Raffinard.
Yeah, I guess my chief complaint is I wish that there wasn't such a fiduciary component connected to the. Well, it's always there's always money to connected to everything, but the late great Dwayne McDuffie, when he was on our show a few years back, he opened up our eyes. I was really unaware that there was this toy component connected to the success of these animated series. That's really what they're about. And in the case of Green Arrow, the Green Lantern series, if the movie had done well, that series would have still stuck around. Failure of the movie, plus the fact that he couldn't really sell any toys to this thing, is what really screws up these TV series. And I'm just thinking that if they really played up to the audience that really gets into these things, and they're young adults, let's face it, young adults to maturing adults that are into the animated stuff, when the animated stuff is closely, really a closer interpretation to what they read weekly, they need to go to an Amazon, they need to go to a Netflix, give us 10 episodes, binge watch it, do it the right, have it done up the right way, and sell the product that would be most appealing to those folks that are into that kind of stuff. Sell the T-shirts, sell the mugs, sell the action figures, what have you. Sell it, you know, have that attached directly to these series in a format that might get you 500,000 viewers, or maybe even more than that. It might be 1.5 million devoted to this kind of programming, especially if you do it through, I'd say even a better bet would probably be through PlayStation and Xbox, because there seems to be more of this symbiosis with the audiences for those things. We see that with the conventions. The conventions in order for the conventions to work now, you have the video gaming audience merge with the comic book pop culture audience. Why not have that available for these TV series? If you're going to get see Green Lantern again or a Young Justice, put it on PlayStation, because Christ's sake, then let's see what happens. Daryl?
Well, I'll take us even back to what Brandon Easton said when we did the interview with him. He said, you know what, frankly, I just give up on trying to decide what the public wants. You know, because I give up, you know, and you know what? He's right. Because they clamor for it, you give it to them, they hate it. You don't give them what they want. You want to build up eventually to what they want, but you don't give them what they want, and they hate that. You know, then they go online. They go in media. They're at conventions, literally just about screaming at you, why haven't we gotten this yet? And you just put up your hands. Make your vision. Don't try to guess what the public wants. I guess that's the motto, but the problem is no one knows what's going to make money. Back to you, Afanar.
Yeah, quickly, we got about 10 minutes remaining. I want to talk about this Earth 2 deal. Now, I know Earth 2, DC's Earth 2 comic series, definitely I would assume it's analogous to Marvel's Ultimates, maybe, very close. I mean, we've seen that they've always been tapping into this alternate Earth going back 60 years now in DC's mythology. But with Earth 2 now, I know that there's a black Kryptonian that is, I mean, not to give away so much about the thing, but the bottom line is, for the listening audience, Earth 2 represents an alternate universe for DC properties, actually, I guess, a reinterpretation even of their Golden Age properties. So whereas you had the Golden Age first, going back to the 30s and 40s and 50s, then the Silver Age, which was the reboot of all those heroes, but they were different, but they were rebooted. And now this Earth 2 coming in after DC's 52, Earth 2 represents those golden age heroes being reinterpreted in a modern way, but kind of sort of like how Marvel has done this alternate line, where you have the traditional trajectories and mythologies that we grew up with, but they're twisting things around. Now we see that Superman is evil. He's been turned evil, I should say. Batman is no longer Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne dies, at least so we have thought, he's dead. And Thomas Wayne, the elder, survives, and he is Batman. And in advanced age, he's Batman. We see that since there is an evil Superman, there's a Kryptonian in order to fight this Superman, this evil Superman that is inexperienced, and he's black. So my thinking is, you know, I'm looking at what's supposed to be happening in a few months with, I guess, another world's finest big event with Earth 2, and I'm seeing a black Superman in a full Superman regalia. So I'm saying, okay, if they're pushing this the way Miles Morales is pushed in the Ultimate Marvel verse, I go to Daryl again. Do you think DC is kind of going that way with this?
Right. Like DC has thought about doing this. Come on. DC is the kings of playing it safe. As a matter of fact, the last book of Earth 2, they actually had Lois talk to Superman. And you see his eyes change like, Lois? Like, to give the reader that hint that, well, he isn't all bad. Mind you, he just destroyed half the world and killed off 3/4 of the superhumans on the dang planet. But he isn't that bad because Superman can't kill. We can't have him do that. So are they going to bring in the black Superman to replace him? Right. I will believe that when pigs fly. Or when we finally get Multiversity out physically out on the stands, which DC assures us, Grant Morrison, Multiversity will be coming out in August. You know, they could take the chance, but the problem is they tied Earth 2 to Earth 1. And through the whole Forever Evil stuff like that, they've tied it to it. When they tie it to the main universe, they are not going to make that major change. All right? He will be another character, but he will not be the one, the sole person wearing the S. They don't like doing that. Their fan base won't go for that. They hate change. Mind you, it isn't 1930s, 1940s anymore, but they hate change. I'll give them credit for doing it. I'll give them credit for putting him in the front with a starring thing, sort of like how they gave Batwing a chance, and the fans that stuck out with that book, you know, I applaud you for supporting it. They gave Mr. Terrific a chance, not much of a chance with the artist rotation on that, but they gave it a chance, all right? They gave Static a chance, which Milestone fans are all laughing at. So they'll give this a chance like they gave those a chance. Sarcasm fully intended. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
You know, but the only thing, Daryl, is that they made Green Lantern gay, and that was big news in this Earth 2 thing. They kind of sort of stuck with... No, but they brought him back, though. He's
I know,
back.
But they immediately killed him off after that became big news.
You know everything after WonderCon.
We'll see.
Well, you know, again, we'll see. And he's on the cover hugging on, well, consoling Power Girl. The fact that Superman killed so many folks, the one that we know of, killed so many people, I can't imagine him being able to live with that kind of, that's just not going to work. We'll see. You brought up WonderCon, Captain. We got about 4 minutes remaining. Let's talk about this. It seems as if that these smaller conventions are gaining more ground now. Like, this is Anaheim, the main San Diego convention. Doesn't that take place in Anaheim also, Daryl?
Yes, San Diego. But you see, you're under the impression that WonderCon is a small convention. I've never considered WonderCon a small convention. You see, the only difference between it and San Diego is San Diego gets Hollywood there. San Diego gets television there. San Diego gets everything that's not comics there. WonderCon for the 4 or 5 years that I've followed it closely has been mainly a comic book convention. And it's the reason why it's like an oasis compared to that. Back to you.
Yeah, well, in Long Island, we have Eternal Con, which is coming up now, and they had to expand that. Are you going to Eternal Con, Dal?
I'm going to try to make it for one of the days at least.
Yeah, you know, because I thought it was pretty cool at the Cradle of Aviation Museum in Garden City / Uniondale, Long Island, and it was a pretty fair deal. We have friends that also attend this thing, and retailers that are going to this thing, so I feel compelled to go there. But the fact that they had to get more space, expand, they weren't so they underestimated how popular this thing is, and these are like smaller things, smaller build-ups. I've heard of WonderCon, but it just seems like each year these conventions are just growing to me, even the smaller ones. It seems as if it's not just about San Diego. That's the reason why I brought it up. I'm not saying that WonderCon is small as far as, like, physically, but as far as the knowledge base about these conventions. Captain, we got a little bit less than 2 minutes. Do you think that the conventions, even the smaller ones, are kind of getting a little bit more shine? You know, the way Captain America is so popular now, Captain America 2, they say, well, it's big because of the backwash from Avengers. Maybe the same goes to conventions.
Well, essentially, this is Reaganomics, trickle-down theory to the smaller comic conventions. But we have to understand, I like what Daryl also said, too, the oasis effect. You know, so these quote-unquote smaller, the ones that don't have Hollywood directly involved, might actually be better for the geeks and nerds, because you don't have that outside influence or, at times, foolishness that comes in there, that type of element. So I definitely think so. I definitely think they are getting better based on the trickle-down theory of Reaganomics. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, folks, we did it, 90 minutes of the comic shop, and, it always feels like it's too short, gentlemen, because I love talking about this stuff. Folks, we'll be back in full effect, live and direct on Wednesday for Afternoon Radio. And, of course, we'll be back with our normal Grindhouse Saturday show for the following Saturday. Continue listening. Continue supporting. We always try to do it better and bigger. See you next time. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. It's been real. See you next week.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.